CliffCentral.com.
That's right.
No more bullshit.
Oh, no.
No more freaking bullshit. No more bullshit. Oh, no. No more bullshit.
No more bullshit. That's right. Good morning, everybody. It's 13 after 6. I'm sorry we're a little bit late, but we almost didn't get into the building this morning. Ben called me in a bit of a panic. He's like, do you have a key? So I said, for what? Your car? He went, no. For the building. We're standing outside. Fashida and I are standing outside the building. Flax is not in today. He'll be standing in for Aria Kelman this afternoon, but we didn't have a key. And who waltzes in? Mabali comes out of the, I don't know, this kind of hazy distance, and she walks in and she goes, oh, hey guys, why are you standing outside like idiots?
I didn't say like idiots.
So turns out you've always had a key. Turns out she's actually the power player here. I don't even have a fucking key, and it's my business.
I thought you had a key, though.
No, I used to. I gave it to someone, and then it got given to Greg, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Anyway,
morning, Ababada. All right, we're going to get straight into things this morning. We don't have a whole lot of time. Justice Malala's coming in later on. Very, very exciting. He's obviously got lots on his agenda to talk about this morning. Plus, the High Commissioner of Australia, Adam McCarthy, will be in with us. He's a very interesting man who I met the other day. And we talked up a storm. He's funny. He's interesting. He's done some amazing stuff in his life. And I thought we'd also explore this very, very bizarre relationship that South Africa and Australia have with each other. We're like siblings who really don't get along, especially when it comes to sport. But everywhere else, we've got quite a lot in common. And they also take some of our racists off our hands, which is nice.
Well, you know, they do us a favor.
And then we're going to speak to Pastor Evan Mawirire, who is the man who started This Flag, the campaign that has got Zimbabwe, oh wow, what can we say, maybe to the tipping point? It's not something that that everybody's thrilled about, especially people in ZANU-PF, but it's also a completely citizen-based revolution. If you want to call it a revolution at this point, it certainly looks like it has the makings of one. But this guy is brave as all hell. He's in South Africa at the moment, and he's going to pop by a little bit later on, and we'll talk to him about Zimbabwe, which is obviously a preoccupation for us here in South Africa with all the right reasons and for all the wrong reasons sometimes. Today, I'm happy to say that it's something that we can speak to the prime mover in that scenario about. But let's get into the news. It is time for Mabali Moloi to give us the latest in what's going on in the world. And it's, what is it, a Thursday? It's Thursday. It's Thursday morning. Yeah, all right. Let's not mess around. Here it is. Everything you need to know in one bite-sized chunk. Wow. What an intro.
Well, I don't know if you managed to catch the press conference that was held at Tambo International Airport yesterday when the team that had summited Mount Kilimanjaro came back home officially, along with Sillo Hadang of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. And what you would have seen, Gareth, was basically a group of broken people, completely shattered into pieces, with a lot of emotion being expressed during that press conference yesterday. You know, just men taking leadership and basically breaking down in front of the nation. It was really quite heavy to watch. And so what we learned from that press conference yesterday was that Sibusiso Vilani, he is the team leader who was responsible for the, you know, for all the climbers. He has personally blamed himself and taken responsibility for the fact that he did not bring Guguzulu back home alive. The press conference kind of began with the doctor who described basically what had happened. She said that Gugu had complained of having a scratchy throat on the Thursday, so she gave him some medication, and later he told her that he was feeling better. Then on the Sunday, she checked in on him to find out how he was feeling, and he said he was feeling great. She said that he wasn't entirely himself because they had known him to be this bubbly, energetic person.
Yeah.
But he did say that he was ready to summit, but that he needed some energy. Later on Sunday, Zulu was still complaining of low energy, so the doctor put him on drip. He vomited after complaining of having nausea, which, according to the doctor, you know, are symptoms typical of people who are summiting. And after a three-hour rest for all climbers, the doctor said that she heard a loud scream. She found him unconscious. He had a raspy breath. He had a strong pulse. She gave him more ventilation. At that stage, he was in a critical condition, and then he died on the Monday morning, early Monday morning.
Sure. What a horrible, harrowing, nasty story.
Completely.
And I mean, I feel for Sibusiso Vilani. And can I say, if our politicians had half the amount of leadership, a sense of personal accountability and responsibility that Sibusiso Vilani had, we'd have politicians who actually cared about the country. And I know he feels responsible, and it's not his fault. I mean, these kinds of things happen. So I don't think anyone in the country is busy going, yeah, it was you, pointing fingers. But it just shows you the power of personal responsibility, accountability, and the fact that that is precisely the sort of leadership, even though it was emotive, it was sad, it was tragic, that is exactly the kind of words that I wish we could hear from our politicians. And not just the words, but the deeds too. Like, you could see he means it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
You know, he outlined his career, which spans a few years, several years, and he summited Mount Kilimanjaro a few times. And yeah, for him, this was a big loss because it was, you know, his first loss, as far as I understand. And so, according to the Nelson Mandela Foundation, the autopsy is likely to be conducted in South Africa. Gugu's body still hasn't been repatriated. His wife is still in Tanzania, and as far as I understand, she's with her sister-in-law, which is Gugu's younger sister. So they're still in the country. I think, you know, it's a lot more laborious trying to get his body back home than what was initially anticipated. And this was part of the reason why Sello Hatang flew over on the Monday, was because he wanted to go and assist with the process of bringing his body back home. So that is yet to be finalized. But yeah, very harrowing press conference last night for everyone involved, you know, all those other climbers who had gone there as well. You could also tell a lot of them just completely shattered by the loss.
Graham says even Fix had a moving speech about Gugu. Apparently, how one good man can unite us. We need more people like this in South Africa. And really, Gugu Zulu is one of those people, I think. Even if you didn't watch motor racing, even if you didn't care about him, he's just a good guy, all-round good guy. Not one person I've ever met had a nasty thing to say about him. I was talking to one of his best friends yesterday, Bisi Tete, who, you know, Monwa Bisi, who used to do a show here.
Mm.
And Bisi was saying how sad everybody is about it, and obviously how his family are dealing with it and everything else. But this is a good guy, and we are very poor for not having him around anymore. Shame. I'm really sorry for his family. I really am. And especially that wife of his, Etsego.
Who was with him right to the bitter end, Gareth. You know, they did absolutely everything together. They were a team in all aspects of their life. With a little baby. It's really going to be quite an adjustment for her, but she'll have a great support system in the circle of friends that her and Gugu shared. So, yeah, we'll wait for him to come back home.
All right.
Okay.
Sure.
So, in election news, Gareth, one of the most important things that the IEC want you to know is that they will not be tolerating any of that selfie business come voting day, because you know how we are these days. You need to capture everything that you do in life with a selfie. I can just imagine people whipping out their phones, you know, while they're voting and thinking that it's going to be a good idea to do that. Absolutely not, according to the IEC. That's the warning that they have now issued.
So what, you're not allowed to take a selfie in the booth?
You're not allowed to take a selfie in the booth, Gareth.
Why? I mean,
it's illegal because it compromises the secrecy of the ballot, according to...
Really?
Yeah, according to a spokesperson for the IEC. It compromises the secrecy of the ballot. He said that the IEC has geared itself up for the unlikely scenario of a 100% voter turnout during the polls. What? Unlikely, okay. There are 5.4 million registered voters in the province of KZN.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect that they will turn up to vote, judging by the excitement that's out there. But yes, people, just be warned. No selfies while you're voting, please. The last thing we want is you being dragged out of a voting booth because you didn't follow the rules.
Yeah, I don't really understand that. Like, if people want to be proud of who they voted for, why shouldn't they be able to take a selfie? I don't see how that compromises the security of the vote or anything else. But if that's the rule, then that's the rule. Yeah, you got to obey it. You still take a picture of yourself outside in the queue. And if you really care about letting everybody know what you're voting, wear the colors of the party you're voting for. In fact, buy a T-shirt.
Or the months of trolling the DA, calling them useless, might suggest you might not vote for them. There's also that. Yeah, it's like the...
Yeah, I interviewed Julius Malema, and Mbuyiseni Ndlozi was with us when we had the interview. I interviewed him on Monday morning, and we'll play that out tomorrow. You know, in the build-up to the elections, I've tried to get all the party leaders. Of course, the president won't talk to anyone. He won't involve himself in any debates. The only thing he does is talk to people in rural places where he knows he won't be challenged. And I think it's also a good idea that we've had Musi Maimane in here many times. Julius, I last spoke to 2 years ago on the show. So I thought it was a good idea to have him on. Tomorrow morning, you can hear what I discussed with Julius. And by the way, it's not one of those opportunities for me to tear them apart. It's really an opportunity for him and for his party to put their manifesto to us, to explain what they want to do, what they want to achieve, what the current climate in the country is. So listen tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock to hear Julius Malema on cliffcentral.com. And you know what he said? He said that they need to sell T-shirts and merchandise in order to be able to pay for ward councillors in all the different wards. He says posters are expensive. He said buses are expensive. And they don't get any government discounts.
It's like a business, isn't it?
It's a business.
It's exactly that. It's a business.
Right.
Okay. Elton John, okay, is in the news this morning because I don't know if you're aware that he is in the country, but it's part of the 21st International AIDS Conference, which has been taking place in Durban this week. Earlier that morning, he had visited a clinic for gay people in the city with Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi. This facility is partially funded by the Elton John Foundation, and the singer described the visit as an amazing experience. But I guess one of the most important things, or one of the things that all the journalists have grabbed onto or latched onto, is Elton John saying that more gay people were coming out and that being open about their sexuality is a good thing. He spoke about this inclusive nature, you know, where he said, we can't win as a society if we exclude gay people, or we exclude transgender people, or we exclude these people or that people. Part of us being successful in moving forward as a human race is being inclusive of absolutely everyone. And unless you are inclusive of everyone, then you're just making it that much more difficult for yourself to fight this problem that is HIV and AIDS. He recalled how he had visited the city several years ago with his husband, David Furnish.
Mm-hmm.
And then he described about how he had met some white gay people at a cafe, but none of them wanted to be photographed with him. This is now a few years ago. None of them wanted to be photographed with him because they didn't want it to come out in the newspapers. They were worried about being outed and being recognized. And so he said, you know, we've come a long way since those days.
And it seems to me you need to take your picture next to me. Come and meet my husband David and get out of that closet now. And you don't have to be embarrassed, 'cause you might just end up singing at Princess Di's funeral.
Don't let your candle blow out in the closet is basically what he's saying. I mean, this is good, you know. So good for Elton John. Comes out here, stands up against homophobia, and lets people be who they want to be and helps out at an AIDS clinic. He's been very consistent about this. You've got to give him credit from the start. And you know what? Don't be like those people who say, all lives matter when someone says Black Lives Matter. Elton John is more interested in gay people's rights because gay people don't have the same rights as everyone else does. Even if they do in writing, they don't always get the same treatment as everyone else does. You know, in this country, we've got massive problems with particularly black lesbian women being targeted in certain communities. Men just can't handle the fact that there might be a woman who doesn't need men in their lives. And we know it's a problem. And I'm not just talking about a problem from an attitude point of view. These women are predated upon by these men. There's violence. Many of these women are killed. And it's not just the women. There are a lot of gay guys in South Africa who feel that they can't be who they want to be because there's violence and intimidation and a whole lot of real homophobia. I mean, homophobia is probably a horrible word because I don't think those guys are scared of gays, although maybe on some psychological level they are, but they're violent towards gay people. And good for Elton John. He stood for this the whole time. It's his cause. It's the thing he wants to help out with. He's been a massive activist against HIV and AIDS for years, from the get-go, just about. And he's lost friends to it, so it's something personal to him. Good for him that he's come here to South Africa to be part of that. I saw Charlize Theron speaking at the AIDS conference.
Oh, yeah, so she is still in the country.
Well, I don't know. She's probably partying it up now, but she was at the AIDS conference. And she made a very powerful, moving speech. I don't know if you got to hear that, but it's worth taking a look at it. I'll see if I can't find some clips for us later on, and you can hear for yourself what she got up to. Back to you, Mubs.
Finally, Gareth, in a story that, you know, some people have said that, you know, the story didn't receive the necessary attention that it probably deserves in the major news headlines. But at least 85 civilians, including almost a dozen children, have been killed after U.S. airstrikes targeted an area in northern Syria, which is held by Islamic State fighters. Some 8 families were reportedly wiped out in the IS-controlled village of Tokar near Manjib on Tuesday. They are describing this as one of the deadliest bombings of civilians by coalition forces since the start of operations in the country. According to the Syrian Institute for Justice, they fear that the death toll could be far higher because rescuers are continuing to pull bodies out of the rubble. The U.S. military have confirmed that they conducted airstrikes in the area and said that they are investigating claims of civilian deaths. But I saw on social media last night there was a hashtag Pray for Syria, and I see the U.S. is getting a lot of flack for what they've apparently said was an accident. But their accident has led to the death of 85 civilians.
Yeah, you know, this is so complicated because, first of all, I hate to say it, but all lives do matter, even Syrians, and because there are a lot of people in America who think that those lives don't. The fact is that civilians are caught up in this conflict, and there are more civilians killed every single day in Syria by parties on Bashar al-Assad's side. ISIS themselves are executing people left, right, and center. But it seems somehow we have a higher moral standard for the U.S. We somehow expect them to be better than ISIS and Assad. This is a war zone, and you're allowed to use that kind of moral relativism in your own life. But I don't think it fits here. And unless you're sitting in Syria, and unless you are one of the people who's ducking from the bombs and the gunfire, or if you're one of those U.S. soldiers, one of the members of the military who put their lives on the line to get involved, if you're one of Assad's people, you have every right to have an opinion on this. Otherwise, it's just noise. I wouldn't want to be the person who makes the call on whether this is right or wrong, because any death of a human, of an innocent human being, is a sad death. And I don't think that anyone is in any position to say that one life is more valuable than another. But you also can't say that the U.S. have to try to avoid killing civilians when that's pretty much all ISIS do, is kill civilians. And Assad doesn't seem to give a shit about the people of his country. In fact, millions and millions of them are trying to get into Turkey, Lebanon, just about anywhere they can to get away from this asshole. So let's not say, oh, America, you killed 85 civilians. You're the most evil country in the world. It seems so easy to go after the only target that's trying to stand up for human rights, for morality, for decency. When they make a mistake, everybody piles on. Those same people are more than happy to let ISIS pass when they take out civilians every day, and sometimes in a much more brutal way. So you decide where you want to sit on that scale. All right, it's time to check out the sport with Ben. Let's find out what's going on over there. Ben, what do you got for us this morning? How many days till the Olympics?
Gareth, it's just one day after 2 weeks. So that's 15 days.
Sure.
15 days. Now, as we get closer to the Olympics, I will guarantee there'll be a lot more positive stories because we'll be so close that they'll actually feature people who are going to try win Olympic gold.
Mm-hmm. But no more dropouts, though, in the last week, right?
Well, there's some tennis players who aren't that keen. But the thing is, like, it's become so kind of old now, blaming the Zika virus, because the colder the weather gets in Brazil, and it's not chilly, obviously, because it's quite tropical, but it's not exactly hot, so the colder the weather, the less chance of any mosquitoes even interested. Like, you can find a mosquito that's got Zika, and he'll look at you and go, eh, couple of months, leave me alone, I'm hibernating. Because they need the hot weather, right? Anyway, so don't worry about Zika. The World Health Organization said it's going to be okay. So when tennis players go, ah, it's the Zika, it's like, whatever.
The Zika has become an excuse for everything.
Oh, it's like playing the Zika card. It's just not worth it. There's way bigger things to worry about.
Yesterday we spoke to Dwayne Dalaka, who's going to be the voice of the opening ceremony at the Olympics. He's also a commentator who's been with us many times before and after the Olympics. He will be there again this year. And if you want to hear that podcast, you can go to cliffcentral.com and download it now.
Right, so 15 days, and on Sunday we've got the big decision around Russia. So the IOC are quite hesitant to do anything too grand and sweeping. We said yesterday that banning a country from the Olympics isn't the easiest thing in the world. There needs to be sort of war atrocities, something as horrible as apartheid or something like that. A little bit of doping here and there, because essentially that's what it is. Yeah, it's tougher. State-run doping? Well, in my book, that's enough to ban an entire nation. Because when a state gets involved, like these Russian officials, they interview them. And the stones on these guys to go, you know what, we're following the processes, we'll see what happens. No, you guys are so dodgy. Can't you just apologize, say you're going to be reformed, step out of this Olympics for the sake of the future, and just really get your shit together? No, these guys will probably try to weasel away around with lawyers. So the IOC know full well that it's very difficult to do this. They're said to be considering legal options, which is basically a nice way of saying, well, we're going to just try to find the back door between here and Sunday. So Sunday could be D-Day when it comes to Russia's participation. That's pretty much the biggest story right now around the Olympics. Another kind of smaller story, although it may be a non-story, it could be a huge story, is WhatsApp in Brazil, right? Now, Brazil, basically there was a child molestation ring, and WhatsApp was used. Brazilian authorities wanted WhatsApp to turn over obviously sensitive information, and WhatsApp were like, well, that's not what we do. So then the government then had to ban WhatsApp. There's been three occasions now where you can be in Brazil and WhatsApp isn't working because it's been blocked. Then the high court says, no, it's unethical, you can't ban a chat service, and it gets lifted. So there's a lot of wrangling around that at the moment too.
You know, governments always use children as the excuse to stop us from communicating with each other. And it's such a horrible, vicious thing to do, to use kids as your cannon fodder and as your human shields in an argument. And they do it all the time. Politicians love this. I went to a discussion on free speech the other day, and the minute they bring up kids, they always say, you know, like they're these huge networks of people who are trying to abuse children, and they're these huge networks of people who are trying to sexually molest or kidnap or ransom or steal your kid. Please believe me, there are not that many people who are interested in your child. Please believe me. The chances that some massive organization of pedophiles... pedophiles are not... I don't know a lot of pedophiles. I don't know about you. But I don't think they're the most organized people in the world.
Well, they're not exactly the most open about what they do, Gareth. It's not like, hi, I'm a pedophile.
But if you take them off WhatsApp, they'll find another way of doing it.
Well, yeah, that's the point I was getting at too.
When they go after WhatsApp because of pedophiles, what I'm trying to say is that they're trying to stop free speech. They're not trying to stop pedophiles. Pedophiles become the excuse. I wouldn't be surprised if government and pedophiles are working together to bring down these chat services.
Well, yeah, it's just another thing that Brazil doesn't need right now as far as bad press, because when tourists get there, they want to use WhatsApp.
You want to be able to communicate with people.
You want to share pictures of you and Usain Bolt and stuff.
Correct.
Anyway, so the big story today, though, is all around football. Big stories, should I say. So it looks like Sam Allardyce will be named the English manager today. All right. So there's a couple of ways looking at this. He's a relegation survivor specialist, right? So he's pretty much he's like a working class hero in that he's never won a title for anyone, right? Never at all. But he's managed to get underperformers to kind of slightly perform so they can stay in a top flight setting, which... in some ways, you think, well, that's not great, because now he's gone from that to the national team. But England, if there was an international relegation promotion battle, these guys would be playing it every single year because of that crap. So maybe Sam is actually the best option here, because England aren't this high-flying nation. They've won squat. 1966, If you really get into the annals of history there, you'll realize there were some dubious matters around how they scored those goals in that match. So 1966, the only time they ever won anything. I mean, they might as well get a charismatic Labrador in there, anything, just to change it up. So Big Sam probably will be announced today. Steve Bruce was the other guy who had an interview, but I think they were doing that just to create some, you know, some stories to try to prevent the inevitable of us finding out. And he's done well with pretty average teams. Now with a slightly better team per se on paper, well, you know, who actually cares? England are always going to be crap. It's part of this pantomime that they are as a country. They promise so much that delivers so little. It's all about the drama with them, and it's all about selling tabloids and marrying orange women. That's England. In other English football news, it looks like Paul Pogba will be getting closer and closer to Man United. He himself has said, look, I'm keen to leave Juventus. I'm keen to go to Manchester United. Juventus then said, we don't want your 80-something million pounds. You have to break the transfer record if you want him. Right. So it looks like Man United are, with Jose Mourinho's persuasion, going to go to over 100 million pounds for this guy, plus wages of £210,000 a week.
Oh, really?
A week.
That's quite a decent payday.
I mean, you can buy your own Sam Allardyce, I think, for like that much every week.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
That's great.
Wow, it's absolutely incredible. Pep Guardiola went back to his old home at Bayern Munich, and he lost yesterday in a friendly for his new team, Man City. But he's looking to get Kroos from Real Madrid. There's another big money offer around that, because he obviously wants the best of Spain to come to England. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that it's one of those big dick-swinging contests, because Mourinho is obviously a big rival of Guardiola, right? So if Mourinho gets Pogba, he's already got a couple of other handy signings. Now, Pep has to bring a lot more firepower to the party here. These Manchester derbies are going to be absolutely amazing. They really are. Again, going back to the pantomime of English sport, here it is.
Wow.
One of my favorite stories, maybe from this year, the Premier League is going to get tough around little dickhead footballers shouting and screaming at them, and intolerable behavior will not be tolerated anymore, Gareth. How exciting.
Wait, is that in this country here?
No, the English Premier League. When Jamie Vardy goes into that ref's face and starts calling him names and that kind of stuff.
Oh, they're going to punish them.
Well, it can be seen as a straight red card now. So if you want to go and act like you're at home and you want to shout and scream, the refs have been given the mandate of, you can red card the guy basically red cards will be issued to players who confront match officials and use offensive language or make gestures towards them. So if they start pointing and saying, you've got a small penis, how can you make a decision like that? You're straight off, which is brilliant. Like in the past, I always thought that these guys should carry mace and just spray them like criminals. But if they're going to get a straight red card, that's kind of cool, because now these guys might behave. Like, it's got so bad that if you play FIFA and there's a foul there, then you see these guys gesticulating with the ref. So what happens? The little kids do that, and before you know it, they're just a whole bunch of gobshites.
Right.
So the yellow cards will also be shown for dissent. It's brilliant. It really is. This is a real positive, progressive move. Just get on with it.
Get
on with it.
I think you have a bit of a double standard here. Doesn't the same thing happen in cricket? What's it called? Sledging or slinging or whatever?
Yeah, but that's
where basically a cricketer can say, yeah, I effed your mother or whatever. And
they
it's
do
perfectly
that to other players.
Yeah, but that's just how Australians communicate, Phillips.
Careful, the High Commissioner's coming in.
I know, and he's going to come in here and he's going to sledge us. He's going to say unsavory things towards us, and that's when we know we're
in. So then why is it okay on one field but not on another?
It's a sign of authority, okay? So basically in rugby, if you've done something bad, the referee will say, oi, you, yellow card. And the guy goes, thank you, sir. Or, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
And he walks off. Or an Australian probably will go, can't. But that's fine, because it's an authority thing, and it happens. In football, though, the guy goes, free kick, you trip that guy. And he's like, what? How dare you, absolute little fuck. And then it gets really messy, and it's just for a free kick. So it happens all the time. It's a slippery slope between that and then in South America, they then shoot the refs. No, seriously, like,
extreme version of it. That's where it becomes very, very real, very, very quickly.
It's a slippery slope towards that. I mean, look at the Macarena. Everyone was doing that. Eventually, you start adopting South American habits. So last year alone, the guy
real,
in Argentina.
That fucking real!
The guy got sent off. He came back in the pitch with a gun and shot the ref. So it's all good and well, this whole, like, oh, I'm going to tune the ref. It's bollocks.
I've met lots of guys at Loftus in my time who've been wanting to exact all kinds of physical nastiness on the ref.
It's just ape behavior.
But that's in the stands, though.
Yeah,
that's,
no, they never acted
it
out.
It's built into your ticket price. It's basically when you spend 70 rand for the Uspavillon, it basically says you can act like it's 12.50.
Fuck yeah!
Basically everything goes except for throwing your own feces.
I'm not entirely convinced, but you know, it's fine. Carry on.
Anyway, I feel like the sport's all over the place today.
Speaking of throwing your own feces, I see Donald Trump brought his kids out on stage at the Republican National Convention. So we had the gorgeous Ivanka and Tiffany, who's also quite good looking, and then those two douchebag sons of his, Eric and Don Jr.
Do they have a different mother? Because why are the girls so much better looking than their
brothers?
The
male chromosome in that family is the problem.
It's Donald's fault.
Yeah. I mean, that Ivanka's a hottie, and she kind of comes along because it's her dad. I mean, you would support your dad even if he were a fascist. But, and I'm not saying Trump is, don't get me wrong. It is fun to joke about him. But the fact is that he paraded all four of his kids out on the stage. There's five kids. There's the little kid, Baron, who's going to be the most spoiled child in the history of the human race.
Name like
that
Baron.
Is an unfortunate name.
Horrible name. But you know what? He couldn't get a decent celebrity. The most famous person he could pull onto stage. And he tried to get Tim Tebow, but he pulled out at the last minute. You know who the most famous person was?
No.
Antonio Sabato Jr. Do you remember him?
I don't remember
what
senior.
Does he do? What does he do again?
Antonio Sabato Jr. used to be a soap star.
Oh, cringe.
Look him up. Antonio Sabato Jr.
What was he in Young and the Restless?
You get soaps and you get soaps.
I don't know, General Hospital or one of those that we don't get in South Africa. But he wasn't. You would recognize him. You'd recognize
him. ER Guatemala or something.
But you'd only just recognize him. Like you'd recognize, you know, if Robin Wright Penn hadn't gone in to do House of Cards, you would have thought, oh, she was the girl who played Kelly on, you know, Bold and the Beautiful. Or what was it called? Santa Barbara. Do you remember him?
Yeah. He used to be okay to look at.
He used to be good looking, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Once. Now, not so much. Yeah. He's got like a bit of a lazy eye going on the one side.
Oh, dear.
So. Anyway, that was the best celebrity that Trump could get. And you'd think, as Bill Maher said, you'd think that Trump could get anyone he liked because he could pay them to be there. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could even have got Hillary for 200,000.
Yeah, because we all know she's crooked. Anyway, let's wrap up the sport quickly. Cricket, tomorrow we'll see the second test starting between England and Pakistan. We played at Old Trafford in Manchester.
Yes.
Stokes, Anderson, and Adil Rashid are coming back to the English squad, so it'll be a lot stronger. But can they thwart the attempts of Yasir Shah, who's now the best bowler in Test cricket, and as everyone is saying this week, basically the best leg spinner since Shane Warne. Only difference is he's got his own hair, he's not orange, he's got his own face, and has not been in a sex video just yet. So I think the Shah is the real deal, and he will go long, long into this career as a real top bowler. Kevin Peterson has committed to a 5-match stint with the Dolphins in the Ramslam T20.
All right.
So if you love Kevin Peterson, you can see him in Durban, where he'll mostly be just drinking at the Oyster Box and playing golf when he's not on cricket field. And in cycling, today is the individual time trial, which is basically the final time anyone can mount a big challenge in Froome because he hasn't got the team to pull him through. Uh-huh. But that's not going to happen. Uh-huh. His lead was extended over 2 minutes yesterday. And, well, yeah, it's basically a parade into Paris, as we said yesterday. Golf news, well, look out for the USPGA July 28th. That's the big thing. That's the next thing to look out for. There is a Canadian Open this weekend, but, yeah, there's a couple of players of note playing it. Otherwise, it's all about the USPGA Championship. More about that closer to the time. That is pretty much it. We'll get into the weekend's fixes with you tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's time to check in with Anthea Gardner. Let's see what's going
on.
All right.
Anthea.
Good morning. Anthea? Hello. Anthea Gardner, can you hear me? Hello. Pashida? We got Anthea there?
Hello, Gareth.
Hey, how are you? How are you, Anthea? What's up?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. Were you excited to hear from Pashida rather than just Flex again?
Absolutely, but she's a bit nervous still.
No, she's doing a great job.
She needs more practice.
She's great, yeah, hundreds. So what's up?
So we had CPI headline inflation yesterday, came out at 6.3% for June, which is slightly higher than the May 6.1%, and slightly higher than I was expecting, actually. So you know the MPC are meeting today, and they would look at this number. I don't think it's that high that they would raise interest rates, though.
All right, because they're really looking for every excuse not to.
Yes, they should be looking for every excuse not to. Total food inflation was probably the standout one. It's still 11% year on year. But I think generally it seems to be leveling out or at least declining. And after looking at all the numbers, I think we could even expect a petrol price decrease next month.
Yeah.
So that would be nice.
Very nice. Anything that alleviates the pocket of the average spender.
Absolutely. And then the market was down close to 1% yesterday. There's quite a lot going on at the moment. So the two shares we mentioned yesterday that made announcements on Tuesday evening after the market closed were both higher. ShopRite, 11.25% up yesterday alone, sure, on the back of that trading statement.
Wow. Yeah, it must be great to be Christo Visa, huh?
Yeah.
This guy, don't take this the wrong way. He must be very, very clever. There's no doubting that, because the guy knows his way around retail and around just generally growing value in businesses, like very few people do. But wow, who would have guessed ShopRite? It's not even that powerful a brand
in this market. But his other company, you know, he also owns Stellar Capital, or he owns shares in Stellar Capital.
Yeah, there I'm a little upset with him.
Well, they were up 2.5% after their deal announcement yesterday. I think the market is struggling to understand and quantify the deal, actually. I mean, honestly, it took Sarah and myself a full hour yesterday to figure out the mechanics and the cash flows. And even then, like, Sarah had to get on a call with Charles Pettit, who runs Stellar Capital, just to make sure we had it absolutely right. So,
see, and you guys are smart, so you imagine how that confuses someone like me.
There's a lot going on. Bottom line, though, I do think there's more upside to come, especially when this deal goes through and people realize the potential of this financials business and kind of the synergies with their KD's business in all future.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because you and I bought these a long time ago.
Yes, at far too high a price compared to where it is now.
Exactly.
And then Astral Foods, the chicken producers, they also put out a trading statement yesterday. I'm afraid this is a bad news story. So they said that results were going to be detrimentally, and that was their word, impacted because of high feed costs, poultry imports, and the weak consumer market. So the high feed cost obviously is high maize because of the drought, and they think it's going to continue into 2017, although they are hedging themselves out and buying kind of ahead, you know, knowing what price they're paying. And importing, that's what I'm trying to say. My goodness.
In other words, paying too high a price, to put it bluntly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the CEO is a little bit unhappy because he said that additional cheap imports had put pressure on the poultry price, so that's the selling price. And I think he feels a bit hung out to dry by the DTI because he had made allowances for this AGOA deal, you know, this deal with the US.
Yes.
And the results really have not been good for him. It's interesting, though, because the results he was commenting on yesterday were to the end of March. And as far as I remember, U.S. chicken only hit our shelves in kind of early or mid-March. So maybe he's trying to give us a heads up for next year and saying, just be careful. The really bad news part of it is that he's saying he's having to cut jobs as a result of all these influences on the company.
That's not good.
Yeah. And then resource shares got pummeled yesterday. Unbelievable. Kumba, Anglo Platinum, Anglo American, they all put out shocking trading statements. Kumba was down 5.5% almost immediately. Anglo American was down 6%, and Anglo Platinum American was down 6%. In Kumba's case, disappointing production numbers. Anglo Platinum was a case of lower sales. And then obviously for Anglo American, because Kumba makes up 25% of their EBIT line, the share was under pressure, but also they said that copper production number was disappointing. I think it was a little bit overdone. At one stage, Anglo America was down 11%. But it did manage a little pullback in the afternoon.
All right.
So people very disappointed there. And unfortunately, well, because global markets were looking a bit positive, gold was down. And so even gold shares were down yesterday, despite kind of, you know, the, I was telling you about the inverted correlation between gold and the other platinum or the other metals. So, and the reason for gold off yesterday in the US, it's earnings season and it's going pretty well. Yesterday, tech stocks and banks were probably the two sectors that led the gains. And this is quite a big thing. So everyone really watches, or everyone is watching now, the US companies reporting this week, not because, well, because really, so the stock market is at an all-time high, and what investors are looking for is to understand whether or not these high share prices are being supported by real growth and earnings and not just assumptions and speculation. And the good thing is that it's following through, you know, so it's all very nice. I tell you what's not following through, Nintendo. Yeah. It was down 12% yesterday.
Does this mean people are not playing as much Pokemon Go as they were 2 days ago?
I think investors are becoming more realistic about kind of where it's at. Nintendo was trading at a 62 times forward PE.
That's ridiculous.
On just one game. It really is crazy.
Well, ultimately, I think that this is it's an indicator of where we're going with augmented reality. But I don't think they've thought it through completely yet.
Sure. So I get that, and it's very exciting. So we look for future trends, but to put a dollar value on it, you can't.
Plus, the people who are playing Pokemon Go are all going to be dead within the next 3 years. They've killed themselves running into traffic and falling off of buildings and that kind of thing. So they're not going to be any users of this game in the future.
I'll remember that, and I'm definitely going to short this share. And then yesterday, there was an announcement by Unilever that they'd bought a company called the Dollar Shave Club.
Oh, yeah. I loved this. You emailed me about this yesterday.
Oh, so you read the story.
Yeah, I watched the ad as well.
Okay, so really cool. So Unilever paid $1 billion for the Dollar Shave Club, which is basically an online retailer of razor blades. And it's a very cheeky company, and basically they're taking on Gillette, which belongs to Procter & Gamble. So Procter & Gamble, 11 years ago, paid $57 billion for Gillette.
Right.
And so Gillette's whole strategy is that they're a premium brand and that they offer you kind of five blades or three blades, and it's all, you know, swivel heads. And it's all about kind of marketing and, you know, the adverts, right? They all have famous sports people in them.
I bought shaving blades just 2-3 days ago, and it's outrageous what you pay for these things. I mean, first of all, you get four in a pack, and it's like $80.
And
they tell you they got five blades and blah, blah, blah. But then I see those cheap two-blade things that you could buy for like R5 a piece, and I'm trying to figure out what the difference is.
Exactly. So basically, the Dollar Shave Club, the CEO does the ad, and he basically says,
let me play a little bit of that for everybody so they can all be in on the joke.
Hi,
all right, here it is.
I'm Mike, founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for $1 a month, we send high quality razors right to your door. Yeah, $1. Are the blades any good? No. Our blades are f***ing great. Each razor has stainless steel blades and aloe vera lubricating strip and a pivot head. It's so gentle a toddler could use it. And do you like spending $20 a month on brand name razors? 19 go to Roger Federer. I'm good at tennis.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome-ass grandfather had one blade and polio. Looking good, pop-up! Stop paying for shave tech you don't need. And stop forgetting to buy your blades every month. Alejandro and I are going to ship them right to you. We're not just selling razors. We're also making new jobs. Alejandro, what were you doing last month?
Not working.
What are you doing now?
Working.
I'm no Vanderbilt, but this train makes hay.
And so on. It's very, very clever.
Yeah. So Dollar Shave Club launched 4 years ago. They already own 15% of the U.S. market share of cartridges, though.
Wow.
Now, the difference is that they actually only own 5% of the revenue share. Well, because they're so cheap.
Right.
Yeah. And people are cottoning onto it. Who wants to go to the store every single month to buy razor blades, right?
And expensive ones at that.
There you go.
Right.
So I quite like this whole branding, marketing, and the fact that Unilever paid $1 billion for it.
Yeah, well done. Good for Unilever. Now they can take on Procter & Gamble and they can both try and screw us.
you're not good.
No, well.
Okay.
Watch them become the $5 Shave Club. Watch. Now that Unilever have got them, they want to pay back the money.
No, they do actually already offer $6 and $9 a month blades. So they're already kind of offering a slightly higher premium.
Yeah,
than
you watch them lose that $1 a month Shave Club.
Yeah. So, yeah, Asia's a bit higher this morning. So it looks like a good news story. We've got MPC announcement later today. Hopefully they'll keep rates unchanged. So I think it should be a good day.
Yeah, mostly. Mostly. Yeah. I'm just looking at capital and counties down another 1.05% yesterday. Should we have just cut our losses? I hate this goddamn capital and counties.
Okay, so firstly, I think you need to stop watching the market every single day. Let's do it once a week.
He's a little bit obsessed, Anthea.
It is his Pokemon Go.
Look what you've done to me.
It is his Pokemon Go.
Hey, it's Anthea's life. If you're going to give me shit about looking at the stocks every now and then,
She's the one advising you not to do it every day.
All right.
And why are you looking at it every day? Are you trying to sell to make space for something else, or what's going on?
Yeah, well.
If you want to buy Woolworths shares, you need to put more money into your portfolio and buy Woolworths shares and be patient, Gareth.
All right. I'm doing what you say, so I'll follow your advice here too.
Be patient, Gareth. The sentence that's never, ever been successful in the history of his life, Anthea.
All right, Anthea Gardner, thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Anthea Gardner with the latest in the money shot. Justice Malala is coming up in a short while. We'll talk to him about everything that's going on in this country and in the world that is of political, social, economic significance. You know, Justice gives you the full enchilada. It's the burning platform every single Thursday, brought to you by Nando's on cliffcentral.com with Justice Malala, who's the most in-demand political analyst in the country right now. If there's anyone who can make sense of crazy stuff that's going on in politics, it's him. Am I right, Ben?
Pretty much. He's everyone's reference point.
Right. Now, another thing that's come up just in the last few days is Donald Trump at the Republican National Convention. I've got an interesting little bit of info here. This is from, I think, Adam. Yeah, Adam DePloy sent this to me. It's Jimmy Fallon doing his impersonation of Trump at the Republican National Convention. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Here it is. Listen to this. This is great. This is great. This is tremendous. Jimmy Fallon.
Thank me. We're going to win big. We're going to win big. Thank me.
Thank me.
It's great to be here. I know I wasn't supposed to be on stage tonight, but our keynote speaker, Alf, canceled last minute. He had to get back to Melmac sad. Anyway, it's been a great convention so far. Last night was fantastic. It was huge. Did you see Melania? She stole the show. Literally. I mean, she delivered her speech like a true first lady. That first lady being Michelle Obama. But still, she might have plagiarized some of it, but you gotta admit, she did it harder, better, faster, stronger. And you can quote me on that. And how great was Scott Baio? Wasn't his speech great? Wasn't it fantastic and huge? I loved it so much, I'm going to put Charles in charge of the nuclear launch codes. It's fantastic to be here, home of Cleveland's great football team, the Cleveland Browns, and home of Paul Ryan's great intern team, the Cleveland Whites. Last night, you heard from Antonio Sabato Jr. from General Hospital. Tonight, you heard from Kimberlyn Brown from The Young and the Restless, which is interesting because for the rest of the week, you'll be hearing from all my children. Don Jr., Ivanka, Eric. Let's also hear it from my great running mate, what's his face? We did an interview on 60 Minutes, or as it's now known, 59 minutes of me and 1 minute of him wondering, what the hell have I done? Speaking of what the hell have I done, Chris Christie is also here tonight. You know, Chris has been a great friend and supporter these past few months. I know he's mad I didn't choose him as my running mate, but hey, that's just how the cookie crumbles. Chris, it's just a figure of speech. Anyway, we got to keep the show moving along. We've got one more speaker for you tonight. Everyone's been talking about Pokemon. Well, we couldn't get Pikachu, but we've got the next best thing. Give it up for the one and only Q-Bert. Gotta catch them all. Cue the music.
You gotta love Jimmy Fallon. He does a pretty damn good impersonation too. All right, lots to talk about this morning, and you can call us on 0861-555-189. We could talk about what's going on in this country. We could talk about Zim. We've got Pastor Evan Mawarire coming in later on. We've also got Justice Malala. We've got the High Commissioner of Australia. It's going to be busy, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Stick around because I don't want you to miss a single thing. Isn't that right? Justice is just making his way into the studio. You can relax, Justice. We're going to take a song first. And he's also looking annoyed because his usual chair is not his. We've swapped the studio around a little bit. Is there a problem? Are you unhappy about this? Where do you want it? He looks like Gedleyhligiso when he gets back to Nkandla and they've taken his stuff.
I mean, this is just, you can't do that.
Yes, we can, and we have. Come on, Justice, handle it.
I can't.
You know what you're doing here.
I might have to go back home and have a sleep.
All right, everybody, we'll be back in a moment with Justice Malala on the Burning Platform. CliffCentral.com.